Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport. We have had the men's semi-finals today. We have the women's final to come tomorrow as we speak to you. I am David Law. I'm not in Paris. Catherine Whittaker most certainly is. She's been there all day for Eurosport, talking to just about everybody you can possibly imagine. We're going to talk about those men's semi-finals. We were going to hear from Chris Evert, except we've had a small technical hitch, so apologies for that. Catherine's going to tell us all about that anyway. But Catherine, first of all, those men's semi-finals, very, very different matches. The first, it was an absolute classic, wasn't it? We're going to hear from Andy Murray in a little while. He fought his heart out. Five sets. Stan Wawrinka, just brilliant. One of the matches of the year for me. What about you?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the matches of the year. A slight disappointment that the fifth set wasn't the fitting end to it. And I'm not sure it will go down in history as one of the classics because of that fifth set not being competitive. But that will be a shame because up until that point, it was really one of the most sensational matches ever. I have to say, there was a part of me this morning that thought that match might be a one-sided whitewash for Stan Wawrinka. I really did. And I was really blown away by the tennis that Murray was able to produce. I think he'd got to this point riding on grit and feistiness and defiance and not on particularly great tennis, you know, standing far too far behind the baseline and not being aggressive on the forehand and just sort of pushing the ball rather than really taking it on. I watched a few YouTube videos of his semi-final against Wawrinka last year and it really struck me how different the tennis he'd been playing this year was. And suddenly in that semi-final he came out and he found the tennis of the semi-final from last year. He really found something that I hadn't seen in this tournament, and I was so impressed. And okay, it wasn't enough in the end, but that's because on his day, Stan Wawrinka is unbeatable, unplayable on clay and probably on hard court as well. And there's absolutely no shame in losing to him. There's certainly no shame in losing him losing to him in the way that he did, you know, absolutely battling. I spoke to him after the match and he looked okay. He looked physically shot. I don't think that's the reason he lost the match. I think he did have enough in the tank physically in the fifth set. I just think that the nature of the way that Wawrinka accelerates through a match and goes up through the gears meant that he just had more to give in the final set. I just think Murray, look, he had that sort of vacant behind the eyes, slightly bewildered. There's nothing left of me to give here. Look about him. He still did a very good job of his post-match press conference and interviews, but he really looked like a hollow shell of a man that had given every piece of himself to that match and was gutted to have lost, but could sort of sleep well tonight knowing that he'd given everything and knowing that he'd found something in him that he's been struggling to find and looking for quite a long time now, and something that will stand him in good stead, I think, for the grass.
Let's hear that interview. Catherine spoke to Andy Murray straight afterwards.
Andy, commiserations today. Such a hard-fought battle. Just your reflections on the match and how you're feeling in the immediate aftermath.
Yeah, I mean, I'm disappointed. I'm tired. Just now, it was a long, tough match. Difficult, you know, fortnight really kind of coming in, not playing well. It was, you know, mentally the matches were quite challenging for me because, you know, I didn't know exactly how I was going to be playing at the beginning of the week. But yeah, disappointed just now, very tired, and yeah, obviously frustrated I couldn't win in the fourth set.
In terms of your year, though, in that context, it seems like you found something in yourself this fortnight that you'd been looking for. Would you say that's the case?
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. That's obviously, you know, these last few months haven't been easy. I've not played well. You know, was struggling, you know, with my game in many aspects. But, you know, this fortnight's been good. Played well in some matches. Got some good wins against tough opponents, and, you know, was only a few points away from reaching the final of the French Open, which, you know, coming in, you know, obviously at the end I was wanting to win the event, but, you know, 2 weeks ago I wouldn't have expected to be in this position. So hopefully this is kind of the start of a strong second half of the year.
So there is Andy Murray, Catherine. I think what you said before we heard from him, very, very well put, actually. That for me, I don't think he could have done anything more, having watched the match. I had it on while working on various other things throughout. And it did seem to me that he was sprightly, he was on his toes, he was giving all the sort of body language that I always associate with a good Andy Murray performance, shouting let's go at himself and grunting after virtually every shot. You could feel he was present. Even when he lost that final set 6-1, he was still fighting. He was just tooth and nail, going for everything. He was not going to let Stan have any of it. And Stan just wrestled it from him. I mean, the way he wrestled the French Open title from Novak Djokovic 2 years ago. It didn't matter that it was Mr. Defiance or Mr. Resilience down the other end. It didn't matter it was Andy Murray, you know, I will do anything to stop you mode down the other end. Wawrinka has that ability to just physically take it from you, and that's what he did. I mean, the shot making, I mean, I there were some people out there on Twitter who I was getting pretty angry with, because how anybody could find faults with that match on any level is beyond me. I thought it was extraordinary. I thought Murray was brilliant, and yet he still lost, and that is saying something. I think one of the only times I can remember feeling like that about an Andy Murray match where he was really good and lost was that Wimbledon semi against Federer. And he ended up losing that in straight sets.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I spoke to Mats Wilander in the makeup room, actually. He was having less significant work done than I was in the early stages of the fourth set. And he was saying that he thought that Andy Murray was probably the most annoying opponent of all time to play against. And he meant it in the most complimentary way possible. He said he couldn't imagine anything worse and more frustrating and more mind-boggling than playing against Andy Murray. And I think that's an enormous compliment coming from Mats Wilander. You know, it's that comment that I think you mentioned to me a couple of days ago that Lendl said about how he shrinks the court. He makes the margins of the court smaller for his opponent. It makes you feel like you've got to go for more. He tracks everything down. Okay, he doesn't hit the winners of a Stan Wawrinka, but when he's playing against a Stan Wawrinka, it's a glorious matchup. When you get two guys absolutely going hell for leather all the time, sometimes it can be a bit of a, it can strike a bit of a discord, can't it? And not be the best of matchups. But this was a glorious matchup to relish. And yeah, you're absolutely right. Stan just physically wrestled it from him. And I don't think it was one of those one-sided fifth sets where one opponent sort of mentally fades away and ceases to believe. I don't think that's the story. It will look like that on paper, but you're absolutely right. Andy Murray was there physically and mentally in the fifth set. He just wasn't good enough in the fifth set because Stan Wawrinka towered over him like this physical colossus, you know, and just was able to play better tennis in that fifth set. And yeah, it wasn't a falling away from Andy Murray. It was just an absolute towering performance from Stan Wawrinka, and he's the Incredible Hulk, isn't he? He's the Incredible Hulk of the tennis court. He's amazing.
Exactly right. I actually said that early on that to me, when I watch him, when he's in that form, he is the Hulk of tennis. And Hulk, the Hulk.
Did you really say that? I genuinely didn't steal that line from you, David. I thought I was up with that for the first time. Did you genuinely say that earlier today?
Yeah, you go back over my timeline. I think I said that in about the third game. When I watch him in this form, he is the Hulk of tennis.
I promise, on heart, you can't see me, but I have hand on heart. I didn't realise I was stealing that line from you.
Well, no, let's put it in a more positive light. We've just sort of, you know, the stars have aligned in our yes. in our respective.
We're on
in
a
my
tennis
office,
podcast in, wavelength.
There you go. Exactly. A tennis podcast wavelength. But no, I'm a bit of a Hulk expert because that's who I wanted to be when I was about six. So anyway, there you go. You've learned something new. What we did have following that is a pretty one-sided match between Rafael Nadal and Dominic Thiem. And to me, at 4-2, 30-love, there was a point where Thiem hit two of his biggest shots that I think he has. And he had Nadal running all over the court, and it ended up with a Nadal winner on the forehand. And there was a look on the face of Thiem after that. He just shrugged his shoulders, and I thought, you're beaten. You don't have anything better than that. And he's just taken it on the chin, and he's still come back for more. So the only question mark for me is, I think Wawrinka is probably the only man physically who can stand up to Nadal and maybe hurt him still, even on clay.
I still
think ultimately Nadal's style of tennis will win the day. That relentless hooking of the forehand cross court onto the backhand side up high, I think that will ultimately decide it. But Wawrinka has that physicality to stand up to him.
Oh, absolutely. I think that goes without saying. I think people talking about Nadal being unbeatable and it being written in the stars for him to win his 10th. Wawrinka is the worst case scenario for Nadal in the final, or in any match. Wawrinka is worst case scenario for him. This, to me, is a 50-50. Yeah, Nadal's the informed guy. He's played impeccable tennis. He has looked unbeatable up to this point, but Wawrinka doesn't lose Grand Slam finals. He doesn't. He's played three of them. He's won all of them. He's played three of them against the world's top players. He doesn't lose them. He rises to the bigger the occasion, the more that Stan Wawrinka rises to them. And for that reason, it's a 50-50, even though he's playing a nine-time champion and the strong favourite for the title. I find it ridiculous that people are saying this could be a one-sided final. Look, Rafael Nadal may very well win. At the start of the tournament, I predicted a Nadal-Wawrinka final, and I predicted Nadal to win. And I think if I was pressed right up to the wall right now, I would probably say the same. But by the smallest of margins, I really think this is going to be toe-to-toe. This is Stan Wawrinka in a Grand Slam final of a tournament that he's already won, in a tournament that he says, and I agree with him, that he's playing the best tennis of his life. It's a 50-50.
Yeah, very interesting. I mean, to me, the question mark is whether he finds his best on the day.
But he always does in a Grand Slam final. What reason has he ever given you to think that he won't?
That's a very good
his
point.
His best may still be beaten by Nadal on clay. It may very well be. This is Nadal on clay. But I do think Wawrinka will find his best.
Oh, I'm excited.
Me too.
I'm excited now, Catherine. You've got me rubbing my hands together on this one. So anyway, that is going to be the final, the men's final on Sunday. The next time you'll be seeing Andy Murray will be at the Queen's Club at the Aegon Championships. And Wawrinka's going to be there. And Nadal's going to be there. If you want to get a ticket, there's still some tickets available for the first 3 days of the tournament. The last 3 days, I know, are sold out completely. But Andy Murray starts at Queen's Tuesday the 20th of June. Go and see if you can get a ticket. There are a few still available with the 20%, no, 30% additional capacity to the stands there. So there's a few more spaces to try to...
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Phil, Catherine, the women's final is tomorrow. You spoke, as I said, to Chris Evert. Sadly, it's an interview we can't get our hands on tonight at this hour due to one or two technical issues.
We might, David, be able to do a sort of newspaper type thing and release a second edition.
Oh yeah,
with the Chris Evert tomorrow morning. What do you think?
But well, let's definitely do that. But do you want to give a brief rundown of what went on or not? Or do you want to hold your fire and wait and put it out?
Well, I don't want to give tennis podcast listeners not a reason to download our second edition, which although I've just come up with off the top of my head, I think is a fabulous idea.
So sorry, listeners, you're not going to get to find out anything about the Chris Evert interview.
I can just give you a quick tease, which is to say that she is fabulous. I've never worked with Chris Evert before this tournament. I've obviously fantastically respected her achievements and enjoyed listening to her in commentary, but I am so endlessly impressed with her as an individual. She has some really punchy things to say about women's tennis. She's a proper feminist, she's a proper advocate of the women's game, of the whole game, but of course in particular the women's game. And I have so much time for what she has to say, not just because she's an 18-time Grand Slam champion, but because she's a woman that knows what she's talking about. And she gives Ostapenko more than a chance tomorrow. Look, Halep's the favourite, but she sees something in Ostapenko. She's this fearlessness, which everybody is latched onto and everybody sees. You know, it's something that the likes of Chrissy Evert, that won Grand Slam titles at 19 and at very young age of their career. I know Ostapenko's just turned 20, but come on, we'll she started the tournament as a teenager. We'll treat her as such. She sees something. She's really excited by her. And as much as it might be Halep that wins tomorrow and probably will be, Ostapenko has a chance. And even if she doesn't win tomorrow, she's going to have plenty of chances in the future.
Yeah, it's far from a foregone conclusion. That match really is.
We don't use that phrase on the tennis podcast anymore, David.
Ah, yes, because 3 years ago we used it about Serena Williams against Sabina Lisicki. And, it wasn't a foregone conclusion. OK, let's change the wording. Incidentally, it's the first meeting between the two of them. There are two elements that make it a really fascinating match for me. One is because Ostapenko's game is so explosive, so silly in its approach at times. I mean, she goes for winners off the back foot, out of deep in her backhand corner, and you're thinking, what are you doing? That doesn't make any sense. And yet she's been making them. So there's that element to it. The other one is just you never quite know with confidence what you're going to get from Halep. So this is a big final for her. She came up short in her other one against Sharapova a few years ago in the French Open. She's done incredibly well to get herself together, hasn't she, over the last few months since that Miami debacle against Joe Konta when her coach left her and then came back and she's promised to knuckle down, and boy, has she. This to me is probably 60-40 in her favour, but I think it could be a cracker as well.
Yeah, I'd say the same, 60-40. I think that even if Halep does win it, there will be wobbles in there. There will be drama. I don't see this being a one-sided whitewash by any means. Just one interesting anecdote to leave you with, or I think it's interesting anyway. Darren Cahill, her coach, a lovely chap, someone we've both interviewed many times in the past, and has always been very helpful with the media. We've been on a wild goose chase to try and track him down. Simona Halep wasn't on the practice schedule that was originally published this morning. That was our plan, to doorstep him off the practice court and tackle him for an interview. But she eventually sort of added herself very late to the practice schedule. We ended up jogging our way over from Philippe Chatrier to the very end of the Simona Halep practice to try and catch Darren Cahill, which we did. And he was absolutely lovely. But he said, look, guys, usually I would do an interview. I'm so sorry. And he was profusely apologetic. But he said, it's been 6 weeks since I've done an interview. And it's been 6 weeks that Simone has been on this amazing run. And I'm not usually superstitious, but I can't afford to take any chances on the eve of a Grand Slam final. So
what a brilliant story.
I'm really sorry, but I'm going to pass. He said, I'll speak to you for as long as you like after the final tomorrow, but for now I'm going to have to say no. And you can't argue with that. We didn't argue with that, and it was a really interesting little insight.
No, it really is, and it's almost better than having an interview. I quite like that.
Well, exactly. Great. We asked our cameraman if he had been rolling, but alas, he hadn't.
No, but the anecdote was worth it. Catherine Whittaker, you've got to go and get to bed. We will try and get you this Chris Evert interview for the morning when we finally get our hands on it.
The Tennis Podcast, French Open 2017, Day 13 Podcast Edition 2.
Exactly. The Tennis Podcast Extra.
It's a bit of a mouthful of a title, but it's worth waiting for. Honestly, she's cracking. It's really great. It's worth waiting for. It's worth re-downloading. I'm sorry we couldn't get it to you for this one, but we will, I promise.
But this one was worth it as well, for the Catherine Darren Cahill anecdote, etc. Right, bedtime. Hope you all have a good sleep, everybody. Wake up bright and early for the women's final tomorrow, and then the men's final on Sunday. Then we've got all the grass court season. Oh, God, I'm never going to get to sleep tonight. This is all too exciting. Catherine, we'll speak to you soon. Have a good day for Eurosport. And, everybody, good night.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.